88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. I'm delighted to welcome the designer Ellen Lupton back to the show this morning. She's the director of the Graphic Design Masters of Fine Arts program at the Maryland Institute College of Art. She's also the senior curator of contemporary design at the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum in New York City. Her latest book is a catalog for an exhibition at Cooper Hewitt. It's called Beautiful Users, Designing for People. The exhibition examines how the design of many of the things that we use every day has become more and more user-focused and how this shift has affected our daily lives. It's great to see you, Ellen. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's like the Ellen Lupton Book of Month Club. You have a lot of books out these days. You were just here recently for another book on type design. So it's great to have you back. It's kind of interesting. This the title of the book, Beautiful Users, Designing for People. So my first thought was, well, who else would you design for?
Oh, that's a very good question. You know, a lot of design is created for the designer or for a client that wants to sell something or memorialize something or send a message. Not all design is created primarily with the needs and wishes and experience of the user as the primary purpose.
Hmm.
And that's a shift and a revolution in design that's taken over the last 40 years or so.
Yeah, so when did that shift start?
Well, one of the pioneers of it is Henry Dreyfuss, who is a great American industrial designer, really helped create the modern profession. And he started asking questions like, why can't we make objects that fit people instead of making people fit objects?
It seems obvious,
right?
Doesn't
it? It does seem obvious, but it isn't, and it wasn't, and it is a revolutionary idea.
And it's interesting. So he and a few others really started studying not only human behavior, I mean, how we might use particular objects, but anatomy, literal human anatomy. He invented, along with a fellow named Alvin Tilley, Joe and Josephine, which are sort of generic depictions of the so-called average American body. So what were they looking for when they looked at quote unquote average American bodies in terms of what they were designing for them?
Well, they wanted to see how the things that we use could be scaled in relation to the body. And of course, this is always an ideal because bodies have huge variation. And designers today recognize that more even than Dreyfuss did. But they wanted to see how can we reshape the world so it better matches the people that use that world. And they did that by observing, by interviewing, by measuring. They really looked at users as the end point mm-hmm. of the design process.
Because you write in the book that we experience design in relation to our own bodies, that it's impossible to not experience the design without the dimension of our own bodies coming into the calculus.
Right, and we tend to think of design as a visual thing and that we buy things based on how they look. But once we start living with something, you're sitting on the chair, you're seeing it with your butt. You're wearing clothes. You're feeling it with your skin. You're not just looking at it. And that's a user experience point of view.
Ellen Lupton is my guest. The book is called Beautiful Users, Designing for People on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. I was fascinated that there are these subsects of design, these areas of design. Let me run through them and ask you to give us a little thumbnail of how designers approach things in different ways. One is called universal design. What's that mean?
Universal design is the idea of creating products that as many people as possible can use, and not just the typical Joe and Josephine, but people who fall outside the norm, people with disabilities, elderly people, children, people who have a different physical and mental makeup than your so-called standard. And what designers have found is that by creating products that more people can use, that accommodate and include more people, the experience is better for almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's called universal.
Yeah. So finding this ideal, of course, is, you know, inherently problematic because, you know, an adult is going to experience something different than a child, et cetera. Is there such thing as a Joe and Josephine, or was Henry Dreyfuss just dreaming there?
I think an example that almost all of us will be familiar with now is the OXO potato peeler. Mm-hmm. And that's a product that was introduced in the early 90s and revolutionized how we experience our kitchen. And if you have ever actually enjoyed peeling a potato, it's probably because you were holding an OXO potato peeler,
which has the spongy plastic rubbery thing.
A thick, chubby handle that was inspired by a bicycle handle. And the designers literally stuck an old-time metal potato peeler inside a bicycle handle to test this idea. And anybody holding it, whether it's a kid or me or my mother, is going to have a better experience because it feels better in your hand.
Mm-hmm. And that was animated by the fact that the designer, Sam Farber, is that his name?
Yeah, he's the creator of the company. His wife suffered from rheumatoid arthritis. And I guess he wanted mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
He wanted his wife to peel the potatoes and enjoy it. And in doing so, really changed everything.
That's it. Necessity is the mother of invention. Yeah. And of course, I remember those old metal ones. I mean, you do a few potatoes and you've got blisters on your palms.
And nobody wants to do it. And you might not think about it. You might not go like, I'm not going to peel potatoes today. But that emotion, that emotional resistance is there. And if it feels good in your hand, you're more likely to actually do the task and mm-hmm. enjoy it.
Yeah. So that's universal design. What about experience design?
Experience design is the whole notion of thinking about a product or a service as not just the physical artifact, the things that we see, but the whole narrative around doing something. So, for example, airport security is an experience design, right? Someone has had to think through that whole sequence of events and how to make it, you know, as pleasant as possible.
Right. So again, it's
not terribly successful, but that's an example of an experience.
So it's totally opposite the notion that you were talking about before, that we think of design as something you look at. This is something you actually literally have to go through. It's a process.
It's a narrative that takes place over time.
Right. Experience design. And then how about interaction design? A fellow named Bill Moggridge described it as wearing in instead of wearing out. Interaction design, what does that mean?
Well, interaction design is how we communicate with the products that we use. And a lot of that takes place on computer screens, our phones, but it's your car, right? It's any product that has a complex communication with the user is subject to interaction design. It's really designing that set of exchanges between people and things.
Mm-hmm. And of course, stasis is the last thing that happens in this thing. You're on a computer screen, you tap the screen or you click the mouse and something happens. So it's a new, different thing at every moment.
Right. And it's always branching. The designer has to always imagine, well, what if the user does A, not B? Then what happens? What if the user does it wrong? Right. How do you help the user recover after an error? Right. You don't want just to say fail.
Yeah, right?
You want to bring the user along in an interactive experience.
Yeah, design it despite the user, right? I love how there's this notion that users are a creative force in their own right for some of these designs. And you mentioned Mr. Dreyfuss, Henry Dreyfuss. He's the guy that designed the telephone in 1937. I mean, I guess this is the iteration of the phone that came right after the vertical spindle where you held the earpiece in one hand and you spoke into the microphone with the other. Mm-hmm. He designed what we know as the sort of desktop telephone. But then in 1953, he redesigned it because he found that the one he had designed in 1937 had a sort of fundamental flaw. Explain what happened with that.
Yeah, well, the flaw is really in the receiver. And so his earlier phone is very beautiful. It's a beautiful kind of Art Deco object, a wonderful collector's item. But the receiver has a kind of ridged shape. So if you try to talk on the phone and hold this receiver against your shoulder, let's say you're peeling potatoes and you want to talk on the phone.
You want to have hands free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that receiver doesn't work because of the ridge sort of triangular profile, because nobody imagined that people would want to do something else while they were talking on the phone. You know, talking on the phone is supposed to be so exciting and so important that why would you distract yourself with other activities? And this is what happens, is a new product is introduced and designers observe what users actually do, and what they actually want to do is two things at once.
Yeah, and then Bell Labs figured out that there were users that they weren't getting in the market, mainly teenage girls. So they designed the Princess phone. The receiver stays the same, but the base of it is prettier and more colorful and a little lighter, so it could sit on their stomach while they lied in bed and talked on the phone.
Exactly. They were looking at the behavior of a new and growing and powerful consumer market.
Yeah. So users have become, you know, in this last 40 or 50 years, you know, front and center in the design process. Is it possible to predict how users are going to change? Because obviously design is going to continue to change and evolve. Can we figure out how we as users are going to be different in 50 years from now?
Well, I think the big thing that's happening now is the rise of customization and the ability for users to ultimately change products to fit their own specific needs. It's kind of the opposite of universal design. Instead of creating one thing that everybody can use, imagine a future where we all get our own potato peeler that's exactly the right size for our hands because it's been printed on demand as it's requested by the user. And that's, you know, where a lot of the future is headed.
Yeah. So you have dedicated this book to your mom, Mary Jane Lupton. She also has Baltimore roots. She's a professor emeritus at Morgan State and, like you, has a lengthy list of publications. Why did you choose her in particular, other than the fact that she's your mom?
Well, my mother...
Which is as good enough a reason as any, but...
My mother is a beautiful user. She was born with a deformed right hand, which I never, growing up, saw as anything but beautiful. But when she was growing up herself, it was a stigma. And her father had made for her a custom prosthetic to hide her deformed hand inside this very creepy, realistic, artificial hand that was much less functional than what she was born with, which has bends and does things. And when she was a young woman, she decided she wasn't going to wear that, that she was going to put that aside and just be who she is. And in our exhibition, we look at prosthetic devices and how they've changed from being cosmetic and from being hiding who people are to actually extending their functionality.
Beautiful user and a beautiful dedication for a beautiful book. All right, Ellen Lupton, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Ellen Lupton, she's the director of the Graphic Design Masters of Fine Arts program at the Maryland Institute College of Art and the senior curator of contemporary design at the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum in New York. Her new book is called Beautiful Users, Designing for People. The exhibition at the Cooper Hewitt Museum is there until mid-April. We've got a link to more information on our website at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Thanks to Estelle Klein for her help getting our segment together this morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more ahead. Stay with us.